afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International for Friday, April the 25th, 2025. It is program number 1363 of the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, in addition to 101.1 FM, you can also get us at our website, rcistlucia.com. And we are also streaming live on Facebook. You just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International on Facebook. And please be sure to like and share that as well with your friends and family. If you want to call in to tell us what's on your plates today, the number to do so is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And you can also message in or as well send in to your calls to our WhatsApp number. And that is 724-0008. Again, 724-0008. Now, we want to send out some birthday greetings to some good people out there. And first, Mr. Kwesi Gordon, happy, happy birthday to you. And we're hoping that you're having a fantastic birthday celebration. Also, to Mr. Gideon Augustine, happy, happy birthday to you, sir. And we wish you an absolutely wonderful birthday as well. We also want to send out birthday greetings to... Sorry, just get the names right here. Right. Oh, sorry. Right. Of course, to... Essie, Kamita Alexander, happy, happy birthday to you and wishing you an awesome birthday celebration. I look back in time to some history which occurred on this day. We go back into the 1600s where in 1660, in fact, the English Convention Parliament met and voted to restore the English monarchy and restored Charles II to the throne. In the year 1792 on this day, the guillotine was first used in France, and it was used to execute a highwayman named Nicolas Pelletier. Of course, later on, it was used to, the following year, to execute the King of France, King Louis XVI. In the year 1846, the Thornton Affair saw an open conflict beginning between the disputed border of Texas, and that triggered the Mexican-American War. 1915 on this day, so the first landings at Gaba Tepe and Cape Helles on the Gallipoli Peninsula, and that was during World War One, where ANZAC forces out of Australia and New Zealand began that invasion in Turkey, or Turkey today. In the year 1920, on this day, San Remo Conference established three Leagues of Nations mandates, a French mandate for Syria and British mandates for Mesopotamia and Palestine, with effect to the terms of the Balfour Declaration. And of course, we're still seeing the impacts of that today with what's going on in Israel and Gaza. 1945, on this day, Elba Day, U.S. and Soviet forces met in Taugau, in Germany on the Elbe River during the invasion of Germany in World War II. And in 1953, on this day, Francis Crick and James Watson discovered the double helix structure of DNA. And that was published in the magazine Nature. 1954, on this day, Bell Labs announced the first solar battery made from silicon and had about 6% efficiency, not so great. And in 1990, Hubble Space Telescope was placed into orbit by the Space Shuttle Discovery. We now head across to our dish of the day.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus, did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also glad that's way and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, Jules Grozy Lakes, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939. Test Plus.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to our program today. And we do hope that everybody's having a good one. Of course, I just want to make mention of yesterday, the Archdiocese of Castries, the Catholic Church here in St. Lucia, had a memorial mass for the late His Holiness Pope Francis, who in fact will be buried tomorrow morning over in Rome. He will be first Pope in a very long time not to be buried or interred in the Vatican. He's in fact decided, as his wishes, to be buried at another basilica in the city of Rome. Of course, as we are speaking of such matters, we also want to extend our condolences to the family of the late Mrs. Editha Tobias. And she was a teacher, educator, for nearly all of her life until a point of retirement, teaching at the St. Joseph's Convent for a very, very long time. And certainly she would be very well known by a number of students who passed through that institution. And of course, she did teach, I think, well, primarily French as well as biology and mathematics as well, I think, to some degree. But she was very much known for teaching French, and no doubt many students will, former students would remember her fondly for her contribution that she played in their lives. So we certainly want to extend our condolences to her family, in particular her sons. Of course, she was predeceased by her husband, Mr. Francis Tobias. Many people would have known him as Photobias, originally out of Trinidad, but certainly became a very important pillar within St. Lucian cultural events, because he was the one who quite often would capture the lots of happenings all around St. Lucia. In a day when, you know, cameras were not as ubiquitous as they are now, everybody's got a camera on their mobile phone, and it wasn't obviously always like that. And so one depended on the trusted photographer to really capture the moment. And he had a way of certainly being in so many different locations at the same time, it would appear, seemingly. And how he was able to go from one to the other was certainly quite remarkable. And so certainly we want to extend our condolences to the Tobias family here in St. Lucia, as well as abroad in Miami. But of course, right here in St. Lucia, Dr. Shegu Tobias, I want to wish him the best of strength at no doubt a very difficult time with losing his mom. Now, on to the matter of the continued debate in the House of Assembly in St. Lucia. We're into the second and final day of the debate on the budget proposals presented by the Prime Minister and Minister for Finance over on Tuesday. And the Prime Minister spoke for about 2 hours and 40 minutes, outlining quite a lot of initiatives, both in respect of infrastructure, of course, making mention of the tagline year of infrastructure last year, kicking off what was meant to be a significant expansion in the infrastructure of St. Lucia. And of course, we can well appreciate that there have been infrastructural deficits over the years, and many of those may stem through the absence of simply just not having enough resources to be able to keep up with our required the needs and the expanding needs of the economy. And so the need to prioritize, of course, when it comes to that matter of infrastructure is no doubt a very challenging thing. And the Prime Minister laying out some continued infrastructure projects. And some of them, of course, have been pretty controversial over the years. One of them in particular is that of the Hewanora International Airport. And airports, of course, are vital in terms of our ability to attract the tourist dollar, to be able to, in fact, ensure that visitors can get in and out of St. Lucia safely and comfortably. And so investment of the Hewanora International Airport was, of course, something that started back in, well, I guess you could say in the 1970s, but we probably need to go even a little bit before that, in the 1960s, because that was originally a U.S. Air Base, Bean Field, as it was called. And, of course, the United States, as part of a what was known as the Ships for Bases Agreement between the United States' Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the United Kingdom's Mr. Winston Churchill, Prime Minister there, agreeing to utilize British colonies in the Caribbean and setting up a ring of defense specifically for the Panama Canal. And of course, again, showing how important shipping and control of the seas was at those times. And of course, the Germans had already shown their ability to be able to strike out into the Atlantic and further afield and even into the Caribbean Sea with their U-boats, which of course were somewhat like submarines. And they, of course, in 1942, were able to even sink two vessels in Castries Harbor, the Lady Nelson and the Umtata. Now, of course, St. Lucia being very close to the island of Martinique, which was France at that time, was under the Nazi occupation and control. And there was a lot of fear that Martinique would, in fact, become a major staging point for German operations in the Western Hemisphere. And so as a result of that, one of the first bases to get going was that of the two bases in St. Lucia, specifically Mr. Roosevelt came himself and visited the Groseillers Bay to look at that naval station that was to have been built in that location in Radwe, which was meant to be used for the occupation of seaplanes. And in the south of the island, for the fixed-wing planes, they were, in fact, using runways. They would be utilizing that base in the south, where there was a lot more flat land for the construction of runways. And so, of course, that was done in the 1940s, and that base remained in U.S. hands until, I think, around 1960, when under the George Charles administration, they, in fact, had negotiated for the return of all the lands that were occupied by those American bases. And what that allowed then, of course, was for the country to start thinking about, you know, the redevelopment of those areas. And so as a result of that, in fact, one of the things that was negotiated under that agreement back then was the establishment of the first non-denominational secondary school in St. Lucia. Prior to that point, up to that point, there was really two main secondary schools, St. Mary's College, St. Joseph's Convent, and there was a private school, Castries Intermediate School, which operated for some time. But the first government school being established at VA4, the VA4 secondary school, through that same arrangement being done by the United States government. And so out of that came this whole plan for the development of tourism. And of course, in 1961, by that point, we already saw the construction of the first main resort in St. Lucia, up at Raidwee Beach. And so, as one may say, the rest is history. And eventually, by 1970s, the Canadian government came on board for the expansion of that that base, the airport that was down at Beanfield, for the purpose of it becoming an international airport. And effectively what was done was the expansion of the runway. The runway was lengthened by an additional 4,000 feet to the west. It in fact involved the realignment of the VA4 River, which at that time went almost directly south from around La Tournée to meet the VA4 town in the area that I think we now refer to as, is it the Mang? And so, of course, that allowed for larger planes to actually be able to land in St. Lucia and to open up the ability of our country now to be able to access a lot more flights, international flights, out of Europe, out of North America. And so, of course, that's effectively the history of the airport. The terminal was built back in 1974, thereabouts, for that purpose. It's about half the size of what was there before, and what is there now, I should say. And then it got expanded again somewhere around 1993. Part of the challenge, of course, in the case of St. Lucia is that we have been operating two airports. The airport in the north primarily handling regional flights, and the airport in VA4 at Iwenora handling our international flights. You can easily compare that with what occurs in nearly every other island in the Caribbean. Of course, in Trinidad, for example, there is one main airport, which is Piarco. And interesting enough, in the case of Trinidad, the Americans did also build other bases, including an air base at Wallerfield in the east. East of Arima, but they did not, in fact, decide to develop that one because Piarco had already been constructed as the main airport, and it was a far more central compared to where Wallerfield was located. And of course, in the case of Barbados, originally they had Sewell, and just next to Sewell, they developed the Grantley Adams International Airport. Point of making in terms of one airport and the importance of that is that it actually allows for interconnection, right? And an easier interconnection. So you can actually land on a flight from the United Kingdom into Barbados, and then you could potentially connect to other Caribbean islands. Of course, in the case of St. Lucia, that's a little bit more challenging because of the 1 hour drive or so between the two airports. And we've kept it that way for a while. Of course, the George Charles Airport, or formerly VG Airport, was the original airport for St. Lucia, built back in the 1930s, I think, in the first instance. And it got expanded a little later on in the 40s, and then later on again. But of course, it is pretty constrained in terms of what in fact can happen at VG. And that is largely because of course, it's a much shorter runway. It is in total under 6,000 feet. Sorry, under, it's about 6,300 feet, roughly. And so, of course, it cannot handle the larger planes as effectively as the Hewanora runway 1028 can do. And, of course, as well, the geography in which it is located is a little bit challenging. Of course, you've got the VG Hills, both north and south of the runway. And, of course, right in to the eastern end, you've got another hill near City Gate. So, of course, it is, and even more importantly, it does not have the realistic space for expansion with respect to allied services and the new requirements for runways and the setbacks from the runway center lines simply cannot be achieved in VG, or at least certainly not without a significant amount of property acquisition and demolition. And of course, that would be considerably you know, disruptive to the city of Castries. And of course, as well, the other challenge is that the mouth of the Castries Harbor is also right on the final approach for incoming flights into the runway at George Charles. So it certainly has not been feasible for the expansion of VG Airport. Albeit we've seen a few proposals over the years. At one point, there was even a suggestion of relocating the terminal building from the north side, where it is right now at VG Beach, to the Point St. Victor side, or the side closer to the Marine Police, where they operate. But of course, that has not materialized over the years. So, of course, the fate of VG Airport is one that has been subject to a number of studies. And I think it's fair to say that most of the studies have concluded that it actually would make some good sense to potentially to close off VG George Charles in the medium to long term and really concentrate airport operations at the Hewanora International Airport. Of course, the reason as to why that has perhaps not quite happened for a lot of people is that the distance in terms of time, and more importantly, the time travel, the amount of time it takes to get to Hewanora, is quite often seen as a bit of a hindrance for many individuals. And, you know, people argue, well, why should I drive an hour to get to an airport to take a 20-minute flight, or maybe a 35-minute flight to Barbados, so you know. But of course, we've seen, even so, how a lot of the arrangements with respect to Caribbean travel have not done so very well over the years. We've seen, in fact, Hewanora. In fact, originally, George Charles Airport was in fact seeing a higher number of passengers than the Hewanora Airport, and that has completely flipped, in which Hewanora is in fact now by far the leading point of entry into St. Lucia by plane, and VG George Charles has in fact been struggling to the point where as a cost center it in fact cannot even pay for its operations on its own. And so that approach, of course, is a matter that has to be discussed at some point in terms of the national development of the island. And of course, if that is the case, if in fact we do look at Hewanora as the main international, well, gateway for both regional and international flights, what that would mean for Hewanora, and of course, what attendant you know, infrastructure needs to be put in place to be able to facilitate that, including, of course, the matter of the road network connecting the south of the island to the north. And of course, that has been also subject to a number of studies over the years. But a lot of talking today, and I think we've already gone over our time for our dish of the day. So what we'll do is that we will end it now and head across to take in our weather report. Of course, that has been brought to you through the kind compliments of the St. Lucia Met Services.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A+, did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got gasoline and vanity. Box, doors, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lane, and Clark Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
St. Lucia, create it with Island Star Bathroom Bonanza. Bundle and save from vanities to toilets, shower sets to vanities. Pair them up, triple them up, or buy five or more for 10, 12, and 15% off.
Do something to talk about.
The more you buy, the more you save. Get discounts on selected items like faucets, LED mirrors, cleaners, and more. What more? Bathroom bliss? Giving you a special introductory offer on toilets starting as low as $240. Island Style Bathroom Bonanza is on at our Castries, Wardney Bay, and Viewfort stores. Call or visit us today.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
And National of Course 1.1, it's now time for your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talent Bath. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours. Winds will be blowing from between the east, southeast, near east, southeast, and east, near 16 miles per hour or 26 kilometers per hour. The weather partly cloudy and hazy, becoming cloudy at times with a few showers. The forecast for the Los Angeles over the Leeward Islands, generally cloudy skies with scattered showers, which may be heavy in some locations and possibly isolated thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly cloudy to cloudy at times with a few showers. The weather summary, a lingering trough system will continue to cause cloudiness, showers, and possibly isolated thunderstorms, mainly over the northern half of the Los Angeles during the forecast period. Light to moderate winds are expected to persist across the Eastern Caribbean region during the forecast period. And this was the weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talent Bath.
This has been RCI's weather news. For more information, call the weather hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Create it with Island Style Bathroom Bonanza. Bundle and save from vanities to toilets, shower sets to vanities. Pair them up, triple them up, or buy five or more for 10, 12, and 15% off.
Do something to talk about.
The more you buy, the more you save. Get discounts on selected items like faucets, LED mirrors, cleaners, and more. What more? Bathroom bliss? We're giving you a special introductory offer on toilets starting as low as $240. Island Style Bathroom Bonanza is on at our Castries, Wardney Bay, and Viewfort stores. Call or visit us today.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. I hope everybody's having a good lunch. And, of course, the number to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, it is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. If you want to call in via WhatsApp, you can also do that. That number is 724-0008. We're going to head to the phone lines at this time to take in our first call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. And what's on your plate today?
Hello.
Hi, caller. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I didn't listen. Right. Now, 1 minute.
Sure, okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. The airport, the way the Americans get those bases on those islands in the Caribbean. They struck a deal with the British.
Yes, that's correct.
For they had several old destroyers.
That's right. The British needed
and
ships.
They gave it to the British.
That's right.
Yeah, that's how it happened.
Yes.
So you get a place like Antigua, you find Barbados, Sea Wet in Barbados, you find Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm-hmm. Trinidad had two bases, Chagaramas and Wallafield.
Yeah. And
Jamaica had had bases as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And St. Lucia. You see, when the plane, we used to have KLM. We used to have BWIA land every day around 10 o'clock, British West Indies Airways. And that is up Vigi. But the runway was a lot shorter.
Yes.
So in the 50s, I think around 54, they cut the hill right down to the sea. So instead the plane, because sometimes when the plane come into land, they abort because the run will be too short.
Yes.
They abort and they go run again and they will land.
Right.
So what they done was to cut the hill the right down.
Yeah, they had, there was actually an old military building on that hill similar to the others where
and
you have
the
embassies.
Same, height.
That's right.
The rest of the hills.
Yes.
And they cut all the way, and they had a job there because it was bluestone. That hill made out of bluestone, one of the hardest stone we have in St. Lucia.
Mm.
And they cut it right, that they drill it and they blast and take it right down to the sea, level to the sea. Now you have a good run. When you don't have to abort or nothing. It's just a flat run to the sea. And it was a lot better now than it was before. And then you have Ridgeway as well, the seaplane.
Right.
During that time there, we had a lot of seaplane. The American used to use seaplane.
Yes.
For Ridgeway.
That's why they brought them up onto the ramp.
Yes,
indeed.
But coming better now, we end up with the UNR that can take any flight that comes in.
Well, nearly any flight, yes, of course. Actually, it's...
I see some plane, they're so big, they can come near UNR.
Right. I don't think
Lingus have some plane, they're so big. They goes to from John F. Kennedy to Gatwick. And then you have a lot of smaller Aer Lingus that will go to Scotland and Manchester, and they'll carry the people down to Ireland.
Yeah.
And that's where you'll board that big Aer Lingus.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of runway length, it's not too bad. Although there are some challenges with the meeting the ICAO regulations, because on on the eastern end of that runway, because the fence is so close, it's considered an obstacle.
Yeah.
In fact, you would recall quite recently over in a city in, I think, was it Busan or one of the cities in Korea. In the South Korea, a plane overshot the runway and ended up. It would have been okay, except that apparently there was some of the authorities that ended up building a wall beyond that runway, the end of the runway, and that caused the plane to in fact explode. It hit the wall and exploded.
Well, that kind of accident, no one didn't have it, you know.
Yeah, so you're not supposed to. So there are very clear regulations about avoidance of having, beyond the runway ends, you should really have those areas left clear. right, left reserved in the event that the plane a plane lands and it can't stop in time and it overshoots, right, it should be able to come to a halt safely. But there is that issue on the eastern end of our runway because of that issue of the fence, the proximity to the fence.
Hello?
So that's something that is definitely you have to consider. But caller, thanks very much for your contribution.
Okay.
Have a good one. And we'll, of course, look into taking in other calls. Of course, as I said, the debate in Parliament continues, and there's a lot of anticipation that the leader of the opposition, Honorable Alan Shastney, will hopefully make a contribution, and I think that is being looked at with bated breath by lots of individuals out there. Good afternoon, and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today? Hello? Hi, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Very good, caller. How are you doing?
Family, everybody cool?
Yes, thanks very much for asking. Yeah, they're blessed.
Yeah. You know, Calix.
Yes, caller.
I listen to people and they comment on the CIP, mostly. And well, I mean, and I sometimes wonder to what extent our people, when I say our people, that's to me inclusive of governments themselves, mm-hmm. politicians, everybody, understand investment, you know, or government rule.
Mm.
As it relates to investment.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, Calix, government has, when you talk about government, government means different things. Government could mean legally the legislative engineer. All right?
Mm-hmm.
It could mean, the judicial, as we often say, judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
The executive is managing the public sector and so on and so forth.
Right.
And the economic role, which is as a player in the economics of the country.
Right.
But I want to speak to a little about our the government's role in the economy, which is essentially to derive revenues, all right, unrequited revenues, you distribute for the purposes of public policy,
mm-hmm.
and delivery of non-market goods and services means that you have to provide education, you have to provide security,
mm-hmm.
health, and so on and so forth. No?
Right, exactly, yes.
Right, so you pick up taxes and have tariffs or whatever, to related activities that fund the expenditures that we expect to see government undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the role within that whole context, too, there's a serious role, and perhaps we never took it seriously until the whole issue we start talking about public-private partnership and so on and so forth.
Right.
That's the issue of regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Regulation was, to me, before, when your father and myself and so on others start really getting into that,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't a word you would hear around the place like that, You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, the fact that we had to, in fact, because of the state of our economy was in, and as it is also today, that public debt, if we have to pursue public debt ad infinitum, all right,
mm-hmm.
without seriously putting checks and balances in
mm-hmm.
place by looking at another means of investment, what will really happen is that the repayment, the expenditure of debt we become so overburdening.
Right.
That we will, the government's capacity to provide even goods and services as we know it will be very restricted.
Right.
And they might necessitate draconian action.
And in comes the IMF to enforce it.
Exactly.
Yes.
And when they tell you, hire a third of your staff,
right.
That's when people realize, well, hey, you know, because you cannot have so many people working and you can't provide them with goods and services. That's why it stands to reason that you bring down that.
Yes.
And try and, you know, but the point here is even for recurrent purposes
mm-hmm.
to run the government,
mm-hmm.
you'll be constrained if the debt goes up unchecked.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And also your investment capacity, because you're going into, you know, deficits and so on, more and more. And it will be harder to get the endorsement and the backing of the multilateral organizations like IMF, unless you show willingness to take action that does usually not palatable.
Exactly.
You know,
so right.
to with your own people,
mm-hmm.
and could knock them real hard.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want money, whatever facility they put you on is contingent on very, very strict conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So enter private public sector. Now you're talking about individuals who have, or corporations would have the sources of capital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't mind investing.
Mm-hmm.
If they get a good deal, and it's all about the art of the deal, you know, like King says.
Trump.
Yes. he loves to say.
Mm-hmm.
If they get a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then how you manage that deal, that's where the regulator is so important.
Right.
Because you have to regulate, have to have serious understanding and knowledge
mm-hmm.
of regulating.
Mm-hmm.
Because that regulator there, now, he's the balance in a threesome thing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
situation.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about government policy,
mm-hmm.
government objectives have to be met.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep, in fact, the operator's viability has to be maintained
mm-hmm.
in terms of capacity.
Yes.
To stay in business, make a profit.
Yeah.
Profit.
Yeah.
And stay in business and expand, and also provide the quality service we demand. And thirdly, of course, maybe most importantly, are the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to please the consumers, the operator, and government. And this is not a difficult. It's very, very difficult. Sorry, I say.
Oh.
It's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
To do that balancing act.
Right.
And we must understand now. CID, I know we seem to change, you know, you hear all kind of statements and you wonder, well, CID, people say, you're selling our passports just to make money, as if cut and dry.
Mm.
But, I mean, have a thought for the investors, the people themselves who put their money.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you have to? Don't they need a measure of satisfaction? They don't need something. They need their pound of flesh too, you know? Eh?
Well, clearly there has to be something that interests them for them to make the investment.
Exactly.
And
exactly. So and the procedure, the requirement of regulation there.
Yes.
Is ultimately to balance risks and reward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because there's risk, To pretend that we could just run a CIP without any risks involved.
Right.
That is just, you know.
Well, then, no.
To highlight the risks now.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that, but to be aware of it. So that's why I feel both government and opposition not treating this matter in a way that suggests they really understand that highlight the risk by all means.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But then match it with the rewards.
Right.
Because, and that is also what the investor, the people bringing in the money, going to be, you know.
And I think you see, that's where, I guess, you know, the word we love to use, transparency and accountability, that terminology,
exactly,
is so very important within the context of programs like the CIP.
Successive governments have not treated that good, right? And having the experience I've had with government people, you know, is that I don't think a lot of them even care to sit down and understand what is required in terms of balancing the risk with the reward.
Yeah.
Shared risk.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
The risks have to be shared. Everybody at risk there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
an investment is a deal, a chance you're taking, you know. You it's not cut and dry. The way is not so clear, obvious before you. And
yeah.
You cannot.
And you
have to do that within the boundaries of whatever contract that is signed.
Yes.
That you don't breach any legal, you know, clauses.
Right. And
you could stand if you do it bad.
Yes.
You know,
it's so important that
you could just tell the leader this thing, you're not giving them anything, and you could face litigation that
mm-hmm.
would cost you so much.
Yes.
So expensive.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes. Well, that's what Mr. Martinez was trying, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. But then you see, even on the reputational risk side, which is so critical in a situation like a CIP, because all you're really doing is that you're saying, hey, you can gain citizenship, which allows you to get a passport, which will then allow you to be able to have easier access, visa-free access to however many countries, right? Now, it's a risk that you are taking as a country, because as we have seen recently, sometimes the individuals who you are giving those passports to have, you. This is where the whole due diligence thing is important. And then even when you do due diligence, you're now seeing the arguments that are being raised by some of the European countries. These people are then using those passports so that they can then land in their country and then seek asylum or refugee status, right? So which then poses an entire reputational risk on all persons who have that passport, right? So definitely there has to be a very good and I think you've put it so rightly that you've got to look at the risks. You have to analyze the risks and how you manage those risks and how much appetite you would have to be able to deal with it. And that's why, you know, some people say, well, you need to be maybe we need to pitch it at a higher level.
So every government should be feel obligated to do more to educate our people on.
I completely agree with you, caller. I completely agree with you. I don't think
Yes. Taxes.
Yes. And you know, it
and
comes to
because of things going up.
Yes, yes.
You lose jobs and things.
It's very easy.
This discussion.
It's very easy, caller, for
it keeps the ordinary man on a level that his understanding of politics is so armstrong and limited that as we go into, because even Trump don't understand the whole dynamics of the role of government and in an economy.
And I would also say that sometimes it's very easy for some of these institutions, right, who run some of these programs to think, well, you know what, all we have to do is just run the program, make sure it is operating right.
You let people say, but we can do that for ourselves.
And then
and when people want to operate at their whims and fancies of how they feel, just wake up one morning and say, well, we don't want you again. When you commit yourself to a level, you sign a contract that's going to land you in heavy, heavy trouble, you know, and all these kind of things. It cannot be. You must have proper regulators, my brother.
Yes. Well, I think that's one of the things that they finally decided to do, thankfully.
Will minimize the risk of dealing with foul play and people that are involved in all kind of things.
Yes.
Because that's what it is, you know.
Yeah.
Because even in normal investment as we know it,
mm-hmm.
you bring an investor,
Well, that's what they're now trying to do.
You don't know who the bankers is dealing with. You don't know what kind of people. And it's as if the banking system, the financial system is fraught with fraud and corruption and all kind of things. So whichever way you go, that is it. That is the reality we have to face. And let's try and manage, you know. Yeah, and if we have to go forward, but to just say, to condemn everything and say, you know, doing stones at each other.
Well, that's the name of the game in politics, you know, Carlos. So there'll always be, sometimes you may have the perfect system, well, if one could exist.
Yeah, but what's the purpose of people like you?
How you mean, in what way you mean?
I mean, how are you, well, to try and show them differently?
Well, we try to, but yeah, Carlos, we all have our limitations, eh?
I know
what you mean. There was a media, but then you still
have enlightened people, my brother.
Right, but then, caller,
so what they doing?
You could try to enlighten, but at the same time, in this world, and this is what we have to be dealing with when you're dealing with fake news and so many different multiple sources of information, and people are being bombarded with all these different storylines, and you know, it's hard for.
If we can't speak a language to our people and put these things in, then our whole education and our whole knowledge.
But as well, what I feel
is
too.
I'm not talking personal again.
I know, caller, yeah, but I'm, what I.
Collective responsibility to that situation also.
But what I feel as well, though, is that the managers, the individuals who run these programs, and I say that, I mean, the institutions, in other words, that run these programs, also have to realize that they have a duty to be able to educate and communicate, right, with the people as well. Because it's part of it's not good enough to just say, well, I'm running a particular national institution and we're doing our work, we're bringing in X million dollars worth of revenue. You also have to explain to the individuals out there. Don't leave it up to the politicians to explain, right? Because we already know that we have trust issues with respect to politicians. It is important that the various technocrats also play a role in educating and informing the public, I should say, as to what is going on in their respective areas of the institutions that they
no
run.
No reward. Didn't the former government bring in the QR King and make some concessions that, unfathomable? You know, you forget?
I remember the dollar an acre.
So what are we talking about? So the point is no risk, no reward. You know, but how good, really, how well positioned you are to manage.
That is correct. That is correct. Yeah. And the legal implications. Thanks very much
for that
one, caller.
Thanks for the time, eh?
Definitely. Thanks very much for your contribution.
I appreciate it.
Take care. All the best. Thank you. And, of course, it looks like we are already heading over time on this program. Quite unfortunate because we just got started. I did want to touch on an ongoing matter over in Guyana right now, coming out of East Bank, Essequibo. Unfortunate story of a young 11-year-old girl who, in fact, was found dead, was missing, and it seems to be quite a horrendous story, leading to lots of public anger over there, but we probably will have to touch that maybe sometime next week as we continue on with our program. So we do hope that you have a very blessed day. Of course, as I mentioned, the budget debate continues and probably will be going into the night. So hope you can be able to catch some of that. And of course, we do also want to extend our condolences. I forgot to mention our condolences to the family of the late Mrs. Catherine Alexis of Groseley, and she unfortunately passed this week, and we do know that her children are certainly rather saddened by her loss at this time, albeit, she made a good score in terms of her age and certainly made a wonderful contribution to her community and her country, but of course, mothers are always loved, and so it's never an easy thing. So we definitely want to send out our condolences to the family, the Alexis family, and of course Armstrong Alexis, as well as Eleanor, the entire family there in Rosalie, and we wish them strength at this difficult time. Of course, all the best for the weekend. We do hope that everybody has a good one, a safe one. Let's hope that we can enjoy what's happening out there. I think there might be a few jazz events already starting out, and of course the opening of jazz kicking off next week on the 30th. So definitely a lot to take in. I hope you stay safe on the roads. Take care.